Hello, everybody. It's me, Patricia, your friendly, traveling, spiritual sidekick, and I'm fine here now. Where am I? Yeah, yes, in beautiful Vancouver. Unfortunately, I got here after the whales have left, so I didn't get to go out in the water with them. But it is so beautiful to be back on the Pacific Northwest. You've tuned in to Beyond the Matrix, the radio program that asks you to think outside the box of convention and soar with the eagles in the free thought zone. And as always, we do that to the best of our ability with some pretty interesting guests and some exciting ideas about where we're headed in this moment of great change. I have with me today my niece. Her name is Dana Corey. She's been devoting herself to helping the animals, animal conservation, which you all know is very, very important and dear to my heart. And so as she's here with me, having spent 3 months working in an animal release environment, I asked her to come on the air and talk about that because she has had firsthand experience of working with wild animals. So hi, Dana.
Hello, Patricia.
I'm so glad you're here.
Me too.
You've told me some pretty interesting stories about your work in that shelter. So I'd like to start out by, first of all, giving us people an idea of what it really is like to be involved that first. What did you do at this? What's the name of this place?
It's called Island Wildlife Natural Care Center. So on top of doing general medicine, they also do a lot of homeopathies and natural Chinese medicine.
Natural Chinese animals on the medicine on the wild animals for pain relief and for healing?
Yes. So the director of the program spent years in China and was actually one of the first people to learn and practice the same type of homeopathies that are used with humans are actually very effective on animals as well.
Okay, so what kind of animals were you primarily working with there?
Primarily harbor seal pups. But we also did have a large array of birds. We had 2 bald eagles at one point. We also had a lot of passeriform small birds, fawns. We had raccoons. We had 10 baby raccoons that came to us after their mothers had been killed by people on the island.
So why are people killing them on the island? Because of encroaching on their environment or sport?
I think for the most part they're a nuisance, and also, you know, we would get, you know, kids that were hurting the animals for sport, that kind of thing. But mainly, there's a huge problem with people finding, you know, raccoons in their backyard, bagging them, drowning them. It's a terrible thing that's occurring on the island right now.
Yeah, and of course, humans thinking animals are a nuisance, you know? It's their environment we're encroaching on, right?
Exactly.
When will human beings understand that this planet was to be shared and that we are not the only living species where everything else has to be moved out of the way so humanity can spread?
Absolutely. And, you know, it's even a bigger problem with the deer on the island as well. And you do find some people that have kind of embraced this living among the animals, and they have, you know, signs up for people to be slowing down, and they have huge front yards that are even, you know, gated with cedars, and they allow the deer to come into their yard, and it kind of serves as a protection and a sanctuary for these deer that are at risk, you know, in most of the land on the island with the cars and everything.
Well, I'd like you to talk to us. You told me a pretty emotional story about your rescue working with, you, apparently a lot of deers get hit. And that one story that you told me, I'd like you to discuss on the air because it was so compassionate. The story of you going out to rescue the deer, would you like to share that with my audience?
Yes. Well, it's very common. It got to the point where we were responding to deer calls every day. And for the most part, we would arrive on the scene and the deer would have already passed or had managed to you know, get away, and we weren't able to retrieve them. And one thing I would like to say also is that a lot of times deer are hit, and people say, you know, it bounced off my car, did more damage to the car than it did to the deer, and they don't call and report it. And what really happens is deer are able to run away, to do many things incredibly injured. And so people think, you know, these deer are fine, and they jump on the other side of the fence, and the deer lies there suffering for days and days until it finally passes. I mean, it's horrifying. So it's very important for people to contact these organizations that offer care and rehabilitation when they hit a deer, and even think that, you know, everything is okay. But on this particular call, we arrived on the scene. A lady was, you know, checking her mail and saw that there was this animal kind of off in the distance. And by the, you know, we got there, and it was obvious that the animal had been there for days and days, judging by the wounds and just the physical state of the animal. And we thought for sure there was no way the animal was alive, and he actually was alive. He was a yearling buck. He was beautiful. And so we walked down into this ditch, kind of hiked down. It was quite a ways, and he was beyond rehabilitation, and so we knew that we were going to have to euthanize him, and so we...
How does that feel? I have to interrupt you. How do you handle having to face euthanization of an animal? It must take so much courage.
Well, you know, it's not something that gets easier, but when you see an animal suffering like that, to be able to help them to transition more peacefully is much better than watching them suffer through it slowly and painfully. So I think that's how I get through it, knowing that, you know, you're making that process easier for them.
Yeah, I had an author whose name is Mark Hawthorne on my show some time ago, who is an expert on animal protectionism and conservation, and he's an animal activist, and he talked quite a lot about what it takes for people like us who are working with protecting the animals to step away from the emotion in order to continue. It's a very demanding, gripping situation to have to confront all of that emotion and always be in your higher self, knowing that what you're doing is the best for the animal and taking yourself out of it.
It's definitely a balance. And in the field, I've come across both extremes, and people who have found a balance with that. Sometimes you find that the people that have been in the field the longest are able to make that separation. And some
right.
people have been doing it for 30 years and still cry every time they see an animal pass. And so I think for me, I've had to find a balance after, you know, 3 months of euthanizing, you know, deer that are beyond recovery. You know, almost every day, it's still...
Almost every day?
And I don't... Almost every day, absolutely. I mean, we would call sometimes 4 times in 1 day. Deer hit all over the island.
Okay, so let's go back to your story of when you found the deer and you went down to assist it.
Well, you know, as I was telling you when we spoke the other day, it's very hard with deer because they go into shock very easily. So even a deer that might be in a position, you know, to be rehabbed, you have to be very careful with your contact with the animal. At the same time, coming across an animal that is clearly in excruciating pain and dying, I don't know many people that could just watch that happen and not sit beside them and just simply be in their presence and help them with that transition. So I,
how did you help?
While my counterpart was, you know, preparing the meds, we heavily sedate before, you know, we euthanize. While she was preparing all the meds, I sat there on the ground next to him. I put his head in my lap, and I covered his head with a sheet, and I laid there until it was over, and then we, you know, carried him, the two of us, up to the, you know, up out of the ditch.
How did you, why did you cover his eyes with a sheet?
Because of the shock, because of all the surroundings being overwhelming, I felt that that would
help calm him down.
Exactly.
Oh boy, that's really heart gripping, Dana. I admire you for having the commitment to doing this work.
Well, thank you. I've been blessed with some amazing opportunities. I've worked with some incredible people, and you know, up until this point, my experience has been limited to the Southern Sea Otter. So this internship was amazing, simply in the diversity of species that I worked with. And hands-on.
Let's talk about the sea. As you know, I'm very concerned about sea mammals. So you were working specifically with sea otters?
Yes, the Southern Sea Otter. They range from, you know, Santa Barbara, California, up into the southernmost parts of Alaska. And up until the big earthquake of 86, was it? I think. There was only believed, at that point, they actually thought the species was extinct. But when the big earthquake happened, the bridge went down in Big Sur, and a small population of about 35 otters were found. And from
that... I didn't know the bridge went down in Big Sur.
Yeah, there was a bridge down there that went down.
That big bridge on Highway 1?
I'm actually not sure which if it was a smaller bridge or if it was that big bridge. But there was a population of sea otters living back there.
So what happened? They migrated away?
No, the different organizations such as the Monterey Bay Aquarium started really focusing on the species and growing the population and what factors were, you know, limiting them and that kind of thing. So it's been a huge program in Monterey to grow the population from such a small...
So they're no longer considered extinct or in danger of extinction?
No, they are still endangered, but they believe that they're growing at about a rate of 3% each year, which is low, but that they are growing. The population is growing.
And what was your work at this center involving, what were you doing with these creatures?
Well, the aquarium has an amazing program. They do have the otters on exhibit. And what we also have behind the scene is an organization called SORAC, which is Sea Otter Research and Conservation. And we respond to any sea otter call in the area, even down south as far as San Luis Obispo. So we will take on pups that have been either separated from their mother, sometimes adult females that have been, they kind of go through a pretty hard process during breeding and all of that. So, but for the most part, it's pups. And then we will pull exhibit females and pair them with pups. And the mothers take them on rather quickly, some otters more than others, some surrogates, I should say. And they teach them how to dive and forage and groom themselves. And when the pups are ready, that we release them and track them for weeks. And we actually just recently had one of our first surrogate pups give birth to her own pup in the wild.
That's wonderful. So that it must be so rewarding to be able to release the animals back into the wild.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's definitely, it makes it all worthwhile when you can see an animal successfully make it in the wild after, you know, post-release.
And I remember talking to you about the eagles. Apparently you had two newly born eagles in this reserve in Canada?
Yes, so we had, we got a call one day from a lady that said she had a black bird in her backyard. So we show up with, you know, a small kennel thinking it's a crow or something, and she said that her dog had been chasing it around the yard and she didn't want something to happen to the bird, so she called us. So we arrived on the scene, and there happened to be two birds, and they weren't crows or anything by any means like that. They were two young bald eagles, and what had happened was a tree had gone down, a nest had fallen, and the birds weren't yet able to fly, so they were, you know, hopping around. And the parents were actually seen in the area, but there wasn't, you know, much they can do to get the birds back in the nest. So we took them back to the center and kept them for about 2 months in a large, large aviary until they learned to fly. And once they were able to fly from one end to the other, we took them both to the very same spot where their parents were, and we released them. It was a beautiful release.
Do the experts believe that the parents will reunite with these babies?
They do. They do.
Wow, how exciting.
Yeah, it was.
How old were they? I'm very curious about this because I was just in Newfoundland on a whale cruise expedition. We also spent time with a different bird species, and I saw a bald eagle perched on high, and it was quite moving for me, as I'm sure it was for you.
Mm-hmm.
How old were these babies, as much as you know?
Only a few months.
Wow. But they can't even feed themselves at that age, can they?
No. They can't hunt themselves. So we would give them, you know, herring and we would give them live food too. Not live food, but we would give them meat as well.
Sure.
And so they, and then by that time they learn how it works.
So we have to say kudos to this woman who saw her dogs chasing around these little babies and managed to be sharp enough to get to you before these little birds were lunch meat.
Right, absolutely. And, you know, as much as there are people that aren't supportive, more than that, we find many people. We get calls every day, people that even see animals that they think are non-native to the island and, you know, want us to know that they've seen them, and is that okay? I mean, people are very active in the community with wildlife and calling us and notifying us of any little thing, even finding something alongside of the road that appears to be dead. Sometimes we'll get someone bringing in an animal that's already passed that they weren't sure. I mean, people are very, very aware of the fact that we're there and we're wanting to help, and they're happy to do the same.
This is so good to hear, considering in some of our some of our societies, people will walk over a person lying on the sidewalk.
Right.
So, it's nice to know, being here in Canada, I'm starting to visit so much of Canada, and I do love, well, I went to Newfoundland, I went to Nova Scotia, I just come in from Montreal, and here I am in Vancouver, and one of the things you notice about the Canadians, first of all, they have a relatively low human population in comparison to the space, the land, the population density is low, and the animal life, therefore, is still abundant.
Mm-hmm.
And to all of my Canadian listeners, I want to say, you know, thank you for your awareness and your integration with nature, because truly, Canada remains one of the great reservations for so many species.
Absolutely.
Right, so let's talk about, you know, my passion for whales and dolphins, and as I remember, you did an expedition and had an encounter with the orcas, which are supposedly the killer. I hate that they're called the killer whales, but we do know that they're pretty aggressive when they're feeding. What was that like?
The transient orcas are the ones that will eat harbor.
They even attack other whales.
Right. Transients tend to be, but actually local whales, you know, are known for just mostly eating fish. So it's the transients that give them the bad rap.
Okay, you transient orcas, get your shit together.
We went out on a Zodiac. There was about 8 of us, and we weren't sure if we were going to see orcas that day. They had been heading south for a while, and we happened to come across, you know, a small pod, and while we were there, 2 other big groups came in, and we were actually able to view an encounter between 2 of the pods, and there was mating taking place. It was spectacular.
You managed to experience the whales in the mating dance?
Yes.
What was it like? What were they doing? How many males were there? I'd like to have a really precise picture of what you were able to observe. You were obviously not in the water. That would have been not a good idea.
No, definitely not a good idea. There was one very, very large male so there was whales kind of all around. If you could picture kind of a circle, and there's, you know, there were some boats too, so there was a circle of whales, and in the middle was this very, very large male that you could tell was kind of the leader of the pack, I guess you could say, the large dorsiflexion, and
alpha whale.
Females around.
I just interjected the word alpha whale.
Okay, yes.
All right, so you had how many females?
It was hard to tell, but there were more than one that were kind of within this circle.
How lucky are you to have captured that moment?
It was amazing. It's something that, you know, some wildlife biologists have yet to see. I mean, it was an amazing experience.
I guess. And you saw the whale actually copulating, right?
Yes.
For lack of a delicate word on this.
Yes, we did. We have pictures.
Okay, great. Well, you're going to let me use some of those pictures, yes?
Absolutely.
Okay, so everybody, if you're listening in, pretty soon we'll be able to get some of these pictures of orcas, which is just unbelievable, actually mating. I'll be getting them up somewhere on my site soon. And you know my site, for those of you who are not familiar with it, is www.syrianrevelations.net. We'll be sure to... This site is going to be under transformation soon, and there'll be much more information about whales and dolphins and animal conservation on my site, as it is so important to us all. If we do not start, well, we've started certainly, but if more numbers of us do not become involved, the species die-off is hallucinatory. We have got to become urgently involved as a civilization in the recovery and safety of animals, and the because of so many extinct and disappearing species. Do you have any idea of the numbers, Dana?
You know, I don't, but I recently took a class on the Endangered Species Act and kind of some of the progress we've made, and also some of the things that have happened in the past, you know, 10 years. And one of the things they really focus on is, you know, if you can't reach people on a level of, you know, let's save these animals just for the sake of, you know, them in their own spirit, just living and having an equal right at living just for the sake of, you know, preserving the species, we have no idea what comes of losing these species sometimes until after they go extinct. So we have,
oh, that's right.
Like the otter, which is a keystone species that, you know, regulates the amount of urchins that are feeding on the kelp forest, which in turn affects the oceans. And so people see species like a mussel that's in the water, and they think, oh, you know, it's a mussel. Who cares if this rare species of mussels goes extinct? But we find after the fact that this one species actually had this huge effect on this chain of the process. It's a hierarchy, and it everything
sure.
affects, you know, everything.
Well, I mean, if you just consider the situation with the bees, as we are seeing so many colonies of bees dying off for whatever they've discovered some kind of bacteria that's killing them all, but there are other examples where they just simply leave the hive. Whatever it is that's happening, something is as important as the bees we don't even think about. But without bees, there's no pollination. Without pollination, there's no nothing.
And
we cannot survive
even,
without the bees.
Right, and sometimes it's not as direct or obvious as that. We have no idea the entire chain of what's going on and all the indirect effects of losing a species like that.
What do you think the future holds for as far as your work? Obviously, you're just beginning in this field, but you're in contact with so many experts, and you will be moving on to other. I hope you'll be moving on to work in this field forever. What do you see down the road as far as the advancement of the work of organizations like the one you work for in really doing big things to make the changes that we need now?
Well, I think that there is becoming a greater awareness for these issues, and I think part of that comes from the situations that have come out of it, the state that we're coming into a time where it's becoming more and more obvious that we are screwing things up. And
yeah, delicately said.
We are. The people.
But the exciting thing is, let me just interject this, Dana. As I just got finished saying yesterday in my my seminar at the convention, it seems to me that human beings, that one of our characteristics as a people, as a species even, is that we need to be pushed up against the wall before we really get into high gear.
Yeah.
Because we're so complacent. We live in complex societies where our idea of comfort compared to the animal species is very exaggerated. And so it removes us a lot from the beauty of nature, the simplicity of nature in all, and its complexity. But it seems to me, and I'm sure you'll agree with this, that it's when we start to really understand, when we're pushed to the breaking point, that we get moving. And it looks like this is the moment. We're finally getting it. Would you agree?
We are in the breaking point. I do. Absolutely, I do agree.
So between climate change, which is killing the animals and just creating such havoc in the ecosystems of the world, and our own abusive behavior with animals, we are really looking at the extinction of millions of species.
Absolutely.
So we need to support the organizations that are out there more than ever. Now, many of you have heard me interview Hardy Jones, who I truly believe is one of our great warriors. His organization is bluevoice.org. He is the man who brings you the video film of the Japanese herding up the dolphins. The dolphins who love us and trust us and celebrate us into the bay in Tanji in Japan, and then slitting their throats, hundreds of dolphins, and then eating their meat, supposedly. And his theory to try to get the Japanese to understand how ridiculous this is that dolphins and whales are some of the most toxic beings on the planet because they absorb so much of the mercury and the other toxins in the ocean. So his approach is, if I can teach the Japanese, doesn't look like I can teach them compassion for the dolphins, but maybe I can teach them that by eating their meat, their bodies are becoming as toxic as the dolphins. So if you want to support someone like Hardy, please do. You know, a dollar, a cup of coffee, a Starbucks coffee, if you're still drinking it, in his fund can help him make a little difference. Please reach into your pockets, you know, a dollar, $5, whoever you want to help. And that little amount can make a big difference if more of us, let's put it honestly, not all of us are like Dana that can go out there and really be actively involved. So let's at least help out by donating, if not time, then certainly a few bucks, guys. And what is the name of your organization in Canada where you worked?
Island Wildlife Natural Care Center. And they actually recently, a lot of organizations, all environmental organizations, that they're lost a huge portion of their funding, and so it's now is the time that they really need the most help from the community and from people. The website is sealrescue.org, and
okay, did you hear that? It's sealrescue.org. People, be honest with yourself. Do you contribute to some of the organizations that are working for the planet? We are so convinced by the media and the bad news mongers that we are at risk in every moment of losing our jobs, of not having enough money to survive. We forget that, first of all, if you're earning a decent amount of money, surely you can take some of that and put it to work for what you believe in, if you're not already doing that. And even if you're strapped, surely you can find $5 to send. Make a commitment. Investigate. I personally am very involved with the whales and dolphins. Dana is working with sea mammals in general. The polar bears, if you're not observing what's going on there, they are now facing extinction. Some people say within 10 years. And so many people are out there doing the hands-on work. Let's help them as much as we can. Please reach into your pockets and send some support to these organizations. We were talking about sea shepherds yesterday, Dana.
I'm sorry, we were talking about...
The sea shepherds with Captain Paul Watson?
Yes, yes.
If you haven't heard of Captain Paul Watson, folks, here's a guy who was one of the directors of Greenpeace. And apparently there was some disharmony there because they thought he was too radical. So he went out and got a boat, a ship, which he named the Steve Irwin, after the great animal conservationist Steve Irwin in Australia, who passed away. Boy, let me interject. What a strange story that was. Are you aware what happened to him, Dana?
You know, a little bit.
They called him the crocodile hunter?
Yes, yes. And with the stingray.
Yeah, the stingray went over the... He was in the boat. The stingray flipped its tail over the boat and stung him in the heart. Are you with me?
Sorry, I think the phone cut out just for a moment.
I say, what kind of strange karma is that, that a stingray would whip its tail over the side of the boat and sting Steve Irwin in the heart?
It's a really tragic story.
It is, but on the other hand, because so many of us grieved for Steve when he passed, but on the other hand, what other way could he go than in the middle of nature?
Absolutely.
I was thinking to myself watching that, I was shocked when that happened, and then I thought, wow, I can just picture Steve Irwin passing to the other side, surrounded by sea animals. There's something beautiful in that.
Absolutely, and you know, I read his wife's book that she wrote about their story and dedicated to him, and she spoke about how he truly lived his life knowing that every day he put himself in danger every day, knowing that, accepting the fact that he might and probably would die in the line of saving wildlife.
Yeah, and I believe, think about him.
The situations he put himself in, they're amazing. They're incredible.
Yeah, to think that he was out there, you know, wrestling crocodiles, those giant crocs, and snakes and whatever, and to have that fluke happen in the ocean, it's almost as if the animal community said, this one is ours, let's bring him through. Very poignant situation. Okay, well, I was talking about the sea shepherds, and for those of you who don't know about this organization, the website is seashepherds.com or .org, and this man, Paul Watson, is, I want to say single-handedly, out there up in the Antarctic and the northern seas as well, trying to get the Japanese to stop killing whales. Are you up on that now, Dana?
Well, just on what you've told me, yes.
Yeah. Well, he was interviewed and he said, well, if the government isn't going to do it, I will. So he's out there in his Steve Irwin ship tracking down Japanese ships, basically harassing them to get out of the waters and to not be able to slaughter any more whales because they're being observed. Yo! All right, it looks like we've lost Dana. Well, okay, we'll do this without her. So if another person that you, or another organization you could give support to is the seashepherds.org, they really need help. They have no funding. and they're doing great work. So think about that too, and we'll see if you can do some good by the whales and the dolphins really need us. They're calling for help. Many of you, well, you know that I'm involved with them. My new book, which I'm working on now, is called Before We Leave You, Messages from the Great Whales and the Dolphin Beings. And they're talking to me about the weaving of sound through the oceans, not only of planet Earth, but of the entire galaxy, of the entire solar system where whales and dolphin species exist on many planets and many dimensions. And according to my source of information, without that music in the ocean, the whole planet goes wonker. One of the reasons why the oceans are so crazy now, and we've been told that it's the Nina effect, has everything to do with the fact that we have Navy sonar blasting them out, literally blasting them out of the water, seeking death over torture from the sound of these intense sonar waves racing through the oceans. And we had a guest on recently who shared that information with us. You can find out more about that, Navy sonar testing, all over the internet, and as on my blog, which is through, you can get to through my site. You need to be aware of that, and you need to think about what you can do to help put pressure on the your representatives in the government to make the Navy stop it. So if you can investigate that, write a letter. I know I'm always beating the drum, asking you all to get more involved, and you do, and this is glorious. And more of us raise the voice, we can really shift things on this planet. So that's it for today. I'm going to cut off shortly because there's a whole incredible biosphere out there of animals waiting for me to come and see and celebrate them. So I am going to cut short today because I've got a pretty thick agenda of things that need to be done. And having lost Dana, I'd just like to leave you with the thought of human beings, animal species, how can we harmonize the existence of the human race in overpopulation and so many animal species at the brink of extinction? How can we, the most intelligent species on the planet, supposedly, find the balance so that the great animals that have walked this earth for millions of years still have their place, still have their honor, their dignity, still birth, grow, and go on to hold their place in the greater things, in the greater scheme of things? And how can we give them their place, the wild? We really need to shrink our population. You know, like that Octomom. Where do we get off with one person for genetically manipulating 16? Did she get 16 kids or something now? This is unacceptable. This is really the abuse of everything that is nature and honor and dignity of species interaction. So that's my spiel for the moment. Think about it and help. You've got seashepherd.org. You've got bluevoice.org. You've got sealrescue.org in Canada and so many other organizations. Find one. Bird rescue, polar bears. Give a dollar, give $5, give what you can, so that people like Dana and others who are just out there hanging off cliffs trying to save the wildlife have help. I leave you with that thought. Please be with me next Saturday, 10 o'clock California time as usual. And remember that every thought you think creates your reality. Love you. I'm off to the Canadian wildlife to see if I can touch it with my own hands. Be blessed. This is Patricia Corey asking you to always remember to think outside the box of convention and soar with the eagles in the free thought zone. Bye-bye.